When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Progress.
3, 2.
And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Metz. Today we are recapping a not-so-great weekend for the Kansas football Jayhawks, but we do have some other stuff going on as well that at least helped to soften the blow a little bit. Yes, the Kansas Jayhawks lost 16-13 to the Texas Tech Red Raiders in a game that I think can only be described as a disappointment. Lots of stuff happened. Injuries, not much else. Well, I'm sorry. Nothing really good went on for the team, but there were still some good stuff to take a look at. So to help me do all of that like he normally does, it is my co-host, my deputy editor over at Blue Wings Rising, Kyle Davis. Kyle, how you doing today?
I'm all right.
Just all right, man. Sure. No, I was gonna say normally you have a little bit more to say, but
I do. Well, I'm gonna get there. I'm saving it all for when we talk about this game. Because
I mean, let's just dive right into it. Because
how about this? I'm a little sleepy, kind of like Kansas was yesterday. Is that maybe a little more apt? I think.
Yeah, I made a comment because you know there were some issues with me getting out there, and so I actually walked into the building probably about 20 minutes before the game kicked off. And so the live blog was up a little bit late. And I made the comment, you know, I wasn't the only one who showed up to the game late because the Jayhawks looked not so great in the first drive, both defensively and then offensively and then defensively after that. So, I mean, it was a very rough start for the team. You know, it looked like Texas Tech was going to run kind of like B.J. Robinson. Was it B.J. Robinson? I'm trying to think. Anyway,
Bijan
Robinson. I was like, B.J. does not. Yeah, Bijan Robinson ran all over them again. You know, for Texas the year before, it looked like it was going to be that kind of game, which I was extremely worried about. You know, potentially at that point, Kansas obviously buckled it down for the second half. But I mean, in that first half, what was it that you saw that made you think, or that might explain what was going on with this team?
This was me against my children on a Saturday morning where they are up and ready to go and fired up. Doesn't matter that it's 7:30 and I wish I was still asleep and sluggish and needing coffee. And that's what it looked like for this game. Texas Tech was ready to go and Kansas looked like it had zero interest in being there. It looked like there was no game plan. You give Brian Borland especially credit for making adjustments and really, you know, battening it down the second half. But like, if you read our preview for this, it was Taj Brooks is already a 1,000-yard rusher. He's by far their most explosive player. You have to stop him. And it's that out of the Texas Tech defense, it is the defensive line that is the one that is like the most disruptive and kind of set the tone. And in the first part, I mean, Brooks ran all over. They gave him over and over again. He had 70 yards in the first 11 minutes of the game, which is just ridiculous. which again, if you're the Kansas defense, like he is who you stop. You game plan around. You do what Iowa State did against Kansas last week, which is you stack the box and make Devin Neal and Daniel Heisman not beat you. And then on the other end of it, it was somehow a four-man rush getting pressure on Jason Bean on third down consecutive drives, making him roll out and scramble and then either throw it away or an incomplete pass. And it just looked like the offensive line wasn't awake. The play calling was pretty vanilla. And, you know, the two stalled out runs, which I get if that's more on maybe the execution, because if the runs get you 4 or 5 yards, then you have a completely different call on third down. And again, four-man rushes were getting to Bean on those third downs. And then on the defense, it's Texas Tech was just perfectly fine running it every single play, because what else, like Kansas wasn't showing that it could do anything to stop them. Now, again, granted, adjustments were made. You know, Brooks had, he had 70 yards in the first 11 minutes, and then he had 63 yards the whole rest of the game. So credit to Kansas. Now they also, he was already nearing 20 catches or reps at that point, because they had given it in the first half. They just gave it over and over, so you knew he wasn't going to be able to sustain, 45 carries for the game or anything like that. So you knew they were going to have to go away from him for a bit. But it was a lackluster effort that then got substantially worse because of injuries to key people, and obviously Jason Bean, but also Luke Grimm and Mason Fairchild took a hit, and there was a couple of bad pass interference by Kobe Bryant in there that it's just, it looked like their heads were not in there until probably, you could argue for the defense midway through the second quarter. You could argue for the offense maybe midway through the third quarter. And then by that point, there were so many injuries to overcome that it just wasn't enough.
It's weird because kind of like you said, the fact that Taj Brooks had 70 yards in the first 11 minutes, like, it would be different if that was like, a 60-yard run. Like, he just broke one and got a ton of yards. No, this was, I think he had 70 yards on like 17 carries. So it's not even like he had huge runs. He just consistently was getting, 3, 4, 5 yards a pop and just running all over the Kansas defense. I will say it definitely seemed like Jason Bean was affected by the knee injury that he, had picked up. And like, I know that they had said it wasn't super serious, but he was limping a little bit. And of course it didn't help that he got his leg bent underneath him again. It was the other knee this time that his leg got bent underneath him. So he's got, he's had some issues there, but they did say that was a head injury for him in the first half. And then he just wasn't able to keep going. I'm hoping that it is not a case where it's like a concussion that he's out for multiple weeks, but I guess we'll see. We'll get some updates later this week on that. But, I think my biggest problem was the play calling in the first half, because the defense seemed to be out of, like, they knew exactly what was coming, and yet they never seemed to have enough guys in the box to handle Taj Brooks. It's not like they were running to the outside a whole bunch. They maybe ran off a little bit off tackle, but Kansas was only, showing like 6 or 7 guys in the box, and they were covering or double covering receivers on the outside when you knew for sure there was no way that they were going to throw that ball. Like, he literally was just turning around and giving it to Taj Brooks, and that was it. Like, there wasn't a fake. There wasn't anything. And
the announcers were even making jokes. So I know you were there. The announcers were making jokes about how, like, oh, I guess we know what's coming up next. Like, it was just so blatantly obvious to everyone involved.
It's funny because I usually turn on the ESPN or I turn on the stream when I'm up there in the press box so I can like look at replays, because normally it's set up just perfectly that I'm about a play and a half behind. So if something happens and I want to go back and take a look at it, it's pulling up or it's showing it on the broadcast immediately when I'm ready to go look at it. But so I was hearing all those jokes and everything. You're right. It was ridiculous. Everybody knew it was happening. I do think offensively, though, I was concerned about the fact that you kept running Devin Neal and Daniel Heisman right into the middle of that offensive line. And I realize that there's an offensive line that's been able to get some holes. But drive one, two, runs immediately up through the middle of the offense of the offensive line gets stopped really short. Drive two. Two runs immediately right up the middle of the offensive line, get stopped short. You have another third down and long, and Jason Bean's trying to throw for it. Kansas consistently put themselves into bad situations in that first half offensively because they ran into the strength of a defense thinking that they could just outperform them. Texas Tech is one of those teams where if they can focus on what they do well, they do it extremely well, and they do it much better than you might expect. If you can get them kind of out of that comfort zone and thinking about other things, that's when you can be successful doing what you like to do bread and butter wise. And it just didn't, you know, they didn't set anything up the way that you would have expected it. I think once Cole Ballard came in, they kind of had to, do something non-traditional. They had to throw everything out the window and figure out what it was that they wanted to do. But even in that third quarter, like, the question was, what is Kansas going to be able to do? Like, I had said Kansas needs to score before the end of the third quarter. Like, they need a touchdown before the end of the third quarter for you to even feel like they had a chance to, to do anything in that game. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure Kansas didn't score until the beginning of the fourth quarter when Devin Neal kicked had that gigantic run. And then all of a sudden the floodgates opened.
Yeah. And to your point about the play calling too, I think you could probably say the biggest stretch of the game is O.J. Burrows gets the interception down at the, 2 yard line or 1 yard line, whatever it is, keeps Tech out of the end zone. That was big. But then, Cole Ballard leads them on a 18 play, 93 yard drive, and you get 0 points.
Right.
And to your point about the play calling, it's on third and fourth and short. You give it to Daniel Hyshaw, who is a bus. And again, I secede any expertise on offensive schemes and play calling to the professionals. I do not pretend to say that I know what I'm doing more than Andy Kordelnecki and his staff. But it's one of those things where you watch enough football and you just ask yourself your question. Like, if it's third and one and you have a guy as powerful as Daniel Hyshaw, why are you snapping it in the shotgun and making him gain 7 yards instead of putting him maybe a direct snap under center and just letting his giant legs and body just push forward and get that ball? Now, again, to your point, you're kind of running right into the defense, but all you have two chances to get just 1 yard. And just that's where it goes back to the play calling. It's one of those things where we see the tush push all the time. It's not successful right all the time. But if you got a guy like Daniel Hyshaw, that dude doesn't need.
Well, and that's the other thing too. It's not if you're going to do the tush push, have Cole Ballard be the one that actually runs it. Have Daniel Hyshaw come up behind him and just shove people. You have plenty of options there that you easily could have pushed that one through. And, or even if you just get the 3 points there, like, that would have been huge for them to have those 3 points at that point, because then you're going down and scoring and taking the lead, and Texas Tech is trying to drive to be able to go ahead and actually kick a field goal to send it to overtime. I also don't understand some of the clock management issues, and I know that we didn't get an opportunity to ask Lance Leipold in the press conference afterwards about that clock management. I know that there's a lot of people that wanted us to, but just the way that conversation was going, the way that they were talking, the way that he took accountability for, like, hey, we didn't do what we needed to do, and he didn't talk specifically about that. But it was pretty clear that if we had asked him, he would have just said, yeah, look, we messed up. Like, we didn't do that right. And so I don't think there would have been anything, like, we wouldn't have gotten any grand insights by asking him, like, why did they call the timeout there with, like, 45 seconds left and give Tech time to get down there? It's just Kansas struggled in this game. You could tell they seemed lethargic. You could tell. But, I mean, the injuries had a huge deal to do with that. Luke Grimm is a huge part of this offense. And the fact that he took that hit, they ended up calling it a pass interference, picked up the targeting right on it. But he did not come back to the game after that. Like, he at first it looked like he got the wind knocked out of him, but he was down on the sideline. Stuff went on, the game kept going because he was off of the field, but he never came back to the game. That had a huge impact on what they were able to do. I got to be honest. It looked like Tanaka Scott kind of took over his spot, and he had three crucial drops during all of that are things that Luke Grimm normally pulls down. So again, I think that Tanaka Scott, as he gets used to being in that role, if Grimm's not able to go this week, he'll be able to perform better. He'll probably catch more of those balls, but it's a really rough position to be in. You have a third string true freshman walk-on quarterback in Cole Ballard, who is trying to run this offense, and he doesn't have the guys that he needs to kind of help, ease him into it. So, Texas Tech was flying around and making a lot of big hits too. The one that they didn't review for targeting that I thought they should have was the Mason Fairchild hit. Not long after Luke Grimm, went
it's
out.
Like, it was like three or four plays later.
It was the same drive. It was just a few plays later, and he smacked him right in the helmet as Fairchild was catching it. Now, luckily, Fairchild held on to it, and he was able to come back later in the game, and he didn't seem to have any ill effects from it. But that was like textbook, we're going to look at this for targeting, and they didn't even review it. I'm not blaming refs. Like, you know, obviously Kansas made tons of bad plays here. The refs were pretty good, actually, for most of the game. They had some, you know, and if you're going to complain about it, I honestly think that they probably benefited Kansas a decent amount more than Texas Tech. Kansas got away late with a offensive pass interception or pass interference on Jared Casey in the end zone as Devin Neal was trying to loft it over to him, which that's another play calling issue. Texas Tech got away with one at the end on that huge, you know, that huge throw down to the like 7 yard line or whatever. But it wasn't as egregious as what Jared Casey did. And, you know, at worst case, it's a makeup for that other one, because, you know, Kansas, Devin Neal's pass should have been picked. Like when he was throwing that, it was that bad. And so I'm not really complaining too much about the officiating there, but like, you know, there was just, it was too much, they seemed to be too lethargic early. And then when they finally picked it up, they just weren't able to string everything together. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that you had a third string quarterback in there, which of course brings us to actually talking about Cole Ballard, because, you know, yes, it's not the great circumstances that you want to kind of throw a guy like that in, but the fact that he was able to come in and perform as well as he did, you know, true freshman, walk-on quarterback that like took the job from, you know, three other people, forced a guy, you know, one guy transferred, Ethan Vasco transferred because Cole Ballard won that third string job. Like, he had a really good debut, and we talked with him afterwards and kind of talked about what it was that allowed him to come in and, you know, kind of have that. And he was talking about Jalen Daniels and Jason Bean and the way they were kind of coaching him up and doing all those things, giving him all the pointers. But the fact that, you know, Lance Leipold talked afterwards, and I think, Devin Neal, Rich Miller, a few of the other guys were talking as well, and they talked about how Cole Ballard's one of those guys that just is super successful in practice. Like, they do the 2-minute drills, and I believe it was Rich Miller who said he's like the only guy, right? Like, when he's in there running the 2-minute drill, they always score, or if not always, like almost every single time. He performs really well in practice. He puts in a lot of the work for it. And so it was great to see him get that opportunity. I just wish it didn't come in an injury situation. But I mean, anything from his performance that really stood out to you?
I mean, you saw it. I think the last 2 minutes of the game, he used his legs when he needed to. He scrambled for a first down. You know, they even tried to, they did a direct snap to, or like a designed run right up the middle with him. He, you know, stood in the pocket. There's one or two times where, you know, some of those, I remember one sack in particular where it was just at the freshman learning curve where he just holds onto the ball way too long. You got to get rid of it. But like, he was pretty poised. You know, he finds Skinner. There's a big third and two. He hits Skinner again to get down to the 30. You know, I don't think you can ask for much more, especially considering he was losing receivers left and right. Like, it's one thing to put in a true freshman third stringer and say, okay, you've got Luke Grimm as your third down kind of security blanket if you need 5 yards, or you've got Mason Fairchild over the middle or whatever it is. They were getting knocked out left and right too. So then, you know, and this is, you know, no disrespect to him, but now you're throwing to, like you mentioned, Tanaka Scott, who had some trouble with holding onto the ball, and Doug Millian and Tory Loughlin made a nice catch there. And so, you know, this isn't on, obviously, Ballard. He gave them a chance to win the game, and that's all you can ask for. He got them down there to tie the game with 26 seconds left. At that point, it's on your defense to force it to overtime, and they couldn't get it done. But like, you look at the game, as lopsided as maybe as it felt at the time, especially, Kansas had more yards than Texas Tech did in this game, which is pretty incredible. They only had three fewer first downs than Texas Tech did. That wasn't all because of Jason Bean out there. Now, you know, he got knocked out early enough, but that was a lot of that came with Ballard. And I think that's one of those ones where, especially as a true freshman, like, there is no, you mentioned the 2-minute drills and practice and all that, like, that all is great, but none of it you really know until you actually get out there and experience it in a live game setting. And as, and to your point, with Texas Tech guys flying around the ball and everything else, and, you know, his numbers aren't great by any means. There was a couple passes that I think he probably wanted back, but all things considered, he put Kansas in a chance to go to overtime and potentially win the game. And I think that's all you can ask for him. And now that, yeah, the good thing is, you know, obviously if Jason Bean can't go against Kansas State, then that puts KU in a bind, but at least you know that he's probably going to get more reps than practice this week, and they can just kind of scheme around him a little bit more. And that's like we talked about in after the Texas game, right? Like it's really hard when Jalen Daniels, you think he's going to go all week, and then at the last second, you know, Jason Bean, all right, it's yours. Go throw yourself in there. You know, Cole Ballard is, you know, he can do whatever he wants as the backup and kind of get ready and reps and all that sort of thing. But it's completely different when it's the second quarter and they're like, all right, you're in. Go get him, young guy. And so, you know, this is one of those things where if you look at where, you know, go back and watch some tape from some of those Jalen Daniels games as a freshman. Like there were some really great glimpses and there were some oof plays. And I think Cole Ballard showed you those glimpses that, man, you can have a pretty good guy in a couple of years. And he did enough, you could say, to try and get you a W in this situation when no one thought at halftime that a W was happening.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, he set himself up to be the backup for the Jayhawks, you know, for the next 4 years, because Kansas is bringing in some pretty good QB recruits. In fact, one of them was on hand for this game to actually watch what they were able to do. And you know, even in the loss and even with the struggles that the offense had, like to be able to see the way that they were able to scheme around Cole Ballard, like that's got to give you confidence as a good quarterback recruit that they're going to be able to do something with you. Overall, I would say it was a fairly impressive performance for Cole Ballard, but it's not as impressive as the lineup from our sponsor here on the podcast. That is the Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. Charlie Hustle is a Kansas City-based company that has collegiate vintage apparel, and they want you to be the best-dressed college fan this season. They have all kinds of fantastic stuff. Kansas, Kansas State, all the other Big 12 schools except for Cincinnati. But the lineup of clothing is absolutely fantastic, and it's getting colder, so you can pick up one of their great hoodies, or, you know, the bomber jackets or any of the other things that they have there. If you go over to charliehustle.com, use promo code 101215, that's TEN1215, you can get 15% off of all non-sale items, and they keep adding new stuff all the time. Look, I am a KU guy through and through, but they have so many different great things for so many different schools that, you know, I am very, very tempted to go and just completely load up on a ton of great stuff for all of the holiday, you know, shopping that I need to be doing. So again, promo code 101215. That is not a one-time code. That is an all-the-time code, meaning that you can go and get stuff for you now. You can go get stuff for people on your Christmas list later, all those sport fans. But tons of great stuff there. Make sure you go check it out. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. All right, the other thing that was also impressive, I thought, honestly, was the second half defensive effort. You actually look, you know, with how much Taj Brooks got in that first half. Second half, especially the fourth quarter, Kansas held Texas Tech to -1 rushing yards in the fourth quarter, which is kind of ridiculous. You know, consider, and they only had 22 yards. No, I'm sorry. They had 23 yards in the third quarter, -1 rushing yards in the fourth quarter. So to give up over 100 yards to Taj Brooks, you know, in that first quarter or in that first half, and then basically hold them to nothing the rest of the game, I thought that was extremely impressive. Obviously, you would have liked to have it for the entire game, but the way that they were able to kind of clamp down and the way that they were able to, you know, really on the Kansas side, you had a ton of different players that were getting in there. You had Melo Dotson get a sack. You had Rich Miller get a sack. You know, Austin Booker was in on a sack as well. So you had a bunch of guys that were getting in the backfield and causing havoc in that second half there. O.J. Burrows, you know, getting that interception finally happening. You know, he had one pretty early that he almost got, and then he finally pulled one down, like you said, to kind of stop a Texas Tech scoring drive. I believe that was actually right before the half. So, you know, I thought the defense did a really good job, especially, you know, anytime you hold a team to 16 points defensively with the kind of weapons that Texas Tech has, you have to feel really good about the defensive performance.
Yeah, again, you can talk about the slow start and not feeling like they came in awake or prepared or whatnot, but there were some good adjustments that were made throughout the game, and that really changed them. They made, you know, like Morton's line was not great in that game, and especially if you look at, you know, only really, I guess you could say that Jaron Bradley was really the only receiver that got you. You know, he was the only receiver that had 30 yards or more. He had 91 on 4 catches, and a big chunk of that was in the last 26 seconds of the game, unfortunately, where Morton finds him and gets him down into the 10. But yeah, there was a different scheme adjustment and added just overall effort level, just the guys flying around a little bit more. And you're right, there was a couple on there where, you know, they were targeting Kobe Bryant a little bit more. He made a couple plays. There's one of them that I thought the pass interference was questionable. One of them was probably pretty, you know,
yeah,
the right call.
But there was one blatant and one that was extremely questionable. So
yeah, but Austin Booker, you know, the forced fumble was, you know, he continues to just be an amazing pickup for the defense and continues to look good. And so, yeah, this one, you know, I also don't think you can undersell. Arguably, one of the big plays of the game was Kenny Logan with that hit on 3rd and 8 to force the incomplete pass to then give Kansas the ball back. And that is just a vintage Kenny Logan play. And so, yeah, I think it was a combination of scheme and also just execution and effort there, where it seemed like guys woke up a little bit and were taking it personally. And they kept, you know, they kept the Jayhawks in the game. Texas Tech got the ball to start the second half. They were pitching a shutout at the time. Like it, we could have been looking at this where third quarter starts and it's more of the same. And then this thing turns ugly fast and forcing multiple punts right off the bat. I mean, this was the defense who kept the game close throughout the whole way. Now, you know, you want the last 26 seconds back, but up until that point, they probably played, it's weird to say, in a loss as well as they had for probably maybe a 25 to 30 minute stretch of game time that they had all year.
Yeah, I mean, Lance Leipold talked about it afterwards, talking about how, you know, even last year, like going down 10 to nothing at the half. And normally, like after the first quarter, when you go down 10-0, like normally by halftime, that would have doubled or tripled. You know, like this is a team that in the past had, when things start to go very poorly, they just snowball and they get even worse. And that didn't happen with this team. This team did absolutely everything that you would expect them to turn the tide, give the offense a chance. And, you know, the special teams even did their part here in this one. Seth Keller making both of the field goals that he took. Now, granted, it was helpful that the longest one was from 24 yards, but the fact that he was still able to hit them, you know, I think there was times where Kansas probably should have tried to get more of the field goals as opposed to trying to punch it in. But I think the defense did what they needed to do. The special teams did everything asked of them at that point. And unfortunately, it was just some unlucky injury luck and all of that stuff that made it very difficult, I think, for the Jayhawks to go ahead and pull this out. But all right, and anything else about this football game that you want to talk about that we need to share, or are you ready to jump over to something else?
I say we jump. You stole my thunder. I was going to say maybe the kicking game's fixed, and that's a silver lining here.
It feels like every time we say the kicking game's fixed, it messes up horribly. So I'm going to say it's not fixed,
right? No,
because
not.
We do not need a horrible kicking game against Kansas State,
right,
this weekend.
So much work to go.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. It's going to be very, very difficult for them to actually show that they're so much improved. So, no. All right. Let's go ahead. We will jump over then to a couple of the other things happening over the weekend. But before we do that, I need to throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we're back. I'm here with Kyle Davis, deputy editor over at Blue Wings Rising, and we are talking about the Kansas Jayhawk weekend for sports. Before we jump into basketball, because, Kansas basketball, actually both men and women played recently, had some dominant performances, but the Kansas women's volleyball team just got back third place in the conference right now. They are still pushing to try to be able to host. They, unfortunately, had split two matches against the Iowa State Cyclones up in Ames over the weekend. The first one went to five sets, and in the fifth set, Kansas just got kind of run out of the building. They lost the tiebreaker set 15-3. But on Saturday night, they again went to five sets after, very, very similar games. But the fifth set in the second match went the Jayhawks' way. They got down a little bit early, but battled back and were able to win that one going away. So a split for the Jayhawks. Iowa State's a pretty good team volleyball-wise, but Kansas is going to find out their fate here. I believe November 26th is the selection show for the NCAA tournament, and so we will find out at that point in just a couple weeks, right after Thanksgiving, if Kansas will be hosting, if we'll all get a chance to see them again at home this year after the end of the conference season or not. I do kind of wish that volleyball had a Big 12 tournament, like a conference tournament, because that would be a lot of fun to have them all come together and, just watch some great tournament action for some of these teams. But unfortunately, the conference doesn't do that. Maybe we can, pitch the idea to Brett Yormark and say, hey, look, we all want to watch volleyball. Like, give us a tournament, please.
Yeah, put it somewhere, put it in Kansas City's great at hosting stuff. Put it in Kemper. Kansas City and just, yeah.
Put it at Kemper. Yeah. There we go.
Right, yeah. I'm all for...
Or I guess it's not Kemper Arena anymore, isn't it? Like, it was, like, bought out by
Ivy, I think, right?
Yeah,
it was... Arena, but pretty sure. It'll always be,
yeah, exactly. Kemper. So, all right. So let's go ahead and turn to basketball. Basketball, obviously, Kansas. Let's start with the women, actually, because the women played... the women played on Wednesday. They had a very good, dominant win with, a ton of newcomers that all got involved. Kansas probably was as balanced as they've been in a really long time. Tyana Jackson, Holly Kurzgeeter, Wyvett Mayberry all, scored in double figures. You also, though, you had some other players that, I wasn't necessarily expecting to really kind of jump in there and show off what they can do. But what were your first impressions? First of all, did you actually get to watch the game? And if so, what were your first impressions of this team?
I did get to see most of it. My first impression is, the free balls are falling. When you can go 16-32, you are doing pretty well, and that's going to sure help. But yeah, you're right. I was interested to see how Samaya Nichols would look in her first game. It wasn't the best shooting game, but it wasn't a bad start. But yeah, Jackson's dominant. Like, we know she's going to be. The five blocks were particularly impressive. And you're right. I think it was, take what you will from an 0-2 Northwestern State team. But the balance, I think, is what maybe stood out the most to me in there, especially on the offensive end, is that it doesn't look like you have to rely on one or two players every single night to get points on the board. I mean, it was really balanced in terms of not only shot selection, but then, and obviously the output. And yeah, when you have Kurzgeeter and Mayberry shooting as well from three as they're going to, that's going to help. But it just seems like, when you just even look at the spacing and the contribution at every level in the game from your guards to your post play and all that sort of thing, it struck me as, take the hot three-point shooting away from it. It struck me as a very balanced offensive attack for Kansas, which is a good thing to see early, even if it's against lesser competition.
Yeah, I mean, to see them be able to take those kind of shots, and I think even the thing that's even more impressive is the fact that Zakiya Franklin was having an off night and didn't really, like, she only scored 6 points. We know that she can score a whole lot more. She didn't play nearly, I think, as much as I was expecting in this game. I mean, she played 25 minutes, which actually led the team. But, you know, it didn't seem like she was as involved in the offense. They weren't going to her quite as often, which was, I think, that was more an artifact of the way that the game went as opposed to, like, a conscious decision, you know, to not go to her because she wasn't performing very well. She still was extremely involved and doing a whole bunch. I also honestly, though, was extremely impressed with the Alabama transfer, Ryan Cobbins, who scored 10 points in her debut for the Jayhawks. You know, she had 9 rebounds, so she was just one rebound shy of a double-double. She was perfect from the line at 5-5. She was very aggressive, got to the line a lot, did everything that you possibly would ask of her. I get the feeling that she's going to work her way to being potentially one of the first people off the bench. I'm just excited to see what she's able to bring. You talked about Smaya Nichols, but you know, I think a lot of that was jitters. You could tell before she made that first one, she was a little tentative to take the shots. Just being able to play in Allen Fieldhouse for the first time, you know, in an actual game, you know, that gets a lot of players. So I'm not surprised if that was the case for her. But she kind of, you know, settled in extremely quickly there and was a huge part of what this team is able to do. I was very impressed as well with Paris Gaines. Only played 9 minutes, but was able to get 5 rebounds at that point. She ended up fouling out. So she's a very aggressive player, is in there bringing that kind of spark that they need. It was very interesting, too. You know, she reminded me a lot of the way that, you know, that, well, really, that a couple different players have played recently for the Jayhawks. But just her ability to play a bunch of different possessions, or I'm sorry, a bunch of different positions and do just a whole bunch of stuff. So I was really impressed with the way that Kansas started this out. And, of course, the defense wasn't anything, you know, to be the defense was fairly impressive, even given, you know, the idea of who the opponent was. So I'm very excited about this team. They have a decent test coming up here on the road. They will be playing against Penn State here on Monday on Big Ten Network at 5 o'clock. So definitely tune in for that one. And then just, you know, a week after that, so right after Thanksgiving, they have that huge tournament where they will be facing both Virginia Tech and UConn. So, you know, this is one that you definitely want to pay attention to. There is no broadcast information yet for those, but I'm imagining it's going to be on probably some sort of ESPN channel. I'm guessing probably ESPNU or something like that. But, you know, this is going to be a great opportunity for the Jayhawks to kind of show what they can do against some of the top competition in the nation and get them set up for the year coming up. So, man, if Kansas can go undefeated in conference play until the last game again, or even undefeated through conference play, that would be a gigantic accomplishment for this team. But I think we're going to find out really quick what this team's made of and what they're actually able to do this year. All right, let's turn to the men. Men played against Manhattan, and I'm going to be honest, my biggest takeaway from this game, I was very disappointed that they once again got to 99 points and were not able to get that last point for 100.
Yeah, but fun fact, you're on pace to score 99 points in every single game they play this year, which would be pretty remarkable.
That would be awesome. You know, do that against Kentucky, and then we'll have something talking.
Yeah.
No.
They were so close, too. There was, you know, we had the Jankovic three, got it to 95, and then Wilty's basket got it to 99. They're so close. You know, there's just like everyone in the building is going nuts. You saw El Marco look over like, can we go for this? He takes the three. That would have brought down the field house. So for maybe the structural integrity of the building, maybe it's a good thing that it stayed at 99.
Yeah. I mean, I think the part that was the most disappointing about it was just the fact that, you know, Kansas got to, they had 5 minutes left and they were at 88. So you're telling me that in 5 minutes they couldn't score 12 more points. Like, that was the part that was disappointing. They had so much time to be able to do it, and they just weren't able to pull it off. And, I mean, you know what? It is the walk-ons. They're walk-ons for a reason. Like, it's not that, I guess, outside the realm of what you would expect. But it was very disappointing that they didn't get it in the opener. They had an opportunity to get it in the second game, and they weren't able to get either one. But, I mean, this was still, you know, this was a fantastic game for the majority of the team. You know, looking here, though, like, Kevin McCullough rates out as the MVP over on KenPom. You know, he had 15 points. He had 7 rebounds. Let's see. a block and two steals, four assists. But I think I was honestly more impressed by the way that Elmarco Jackson played. You know, Dwan Harris kind of struggled in this game. You know, he only took one shot. Well, he took two shots. No, sorry. He took four shots because he actually took two twos and then two threes. Only made one shot, but he only had five assists, whereas Elmarco Jackson had 10 assists on the game. You know, who was it that stood out to you in this game, though? Like, obviously, Hunter Dickinson was great. He led the Jayhawks in scoring with 18, you know. And obviously, Kevin McCullough was great, but you kind of expect that from those guys. Who was it that really impressed you the most?
I'll give you Elmarco. If you're getting Elmarco, then I'll go with Johnny Furphy, because I mean, come on, like he's I think just because if you would say, okay, we have this young Australian kid who should still be in high school right now, who along with trying to adapt to, you know, college level opponents, is also trying to go through the culture shock of moving to America. And also, by the way, he's had shin splints, so he has not been practicing nearly as much as everyone else on the team. Missed some of the exhibition work, and you know, all he does is score 15 points and just look like he is. He just knows what he's doing out there. He looks comfortable for the most part. If he's not comfortable, he doesn't really show it. A lot of comparisons are obviously being made between he and Svi, but I mean, at least in my eyes, he is well above where Svi was as a freshman. I think if you're trying to compare him, you're comparing freshman Johnny Furphy with maybe sophomore, junior Svi here. It just looks like he has a little bit more of a complete game. Other than that, I was also really interested to see how Jamari McDowell did in his debut. Now, this is a guy who's probably not going to get that much run, but also just because of the depth, like, he might be one of those spark guys, and you could already see the way that he crashed the boards and was just kind of that high energy guy on there. I think it's something that is good to have as your maybe, you know, eighth or ninth player on the roster. And then we talked about it last time, like Parker Brown is just going to be a reliable backup center who can go up and grab alley-oops and can block shots and get you 6 to 8 points in 14 minutes. Because again, and we talked about this when Hunter Dickinson first came to Kansas and we're looking into it, and I broke this down in an article. You know, this is not a – Hunter Dickinson is not a guy who has throughout his career played 35 to 37 minutes a game. He has been at his best when he plays about 28 to 30 minutes a game, which means you have 12 minutes without him on the floor. And I think to have a guy like Parker Brown who can play 10 to 12 minutes, get you – three baskets, a couple rebounds on a block. Like, that is pretty valuable, especially when we get into, you know, Kentucky and all that sort of thing. So out of the non-mainstays on this team, obviously, I think obviously Furphy took all of the kind of accolade and the social media was going nuts. But I thought McDowell looked pretty good for his first game as well. And then I think Brown, we know what he's going to be, but it's nice to just see it again in the second, you know, back-to-back situations, just that reliability.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kansas got the number one ranking based off of who their starting lineup is and how good that starting lineup can be. But whether they can maintain that and whether they can, you know, hit all the expectations for them this year is going to depend on the bench. I do think, though, Elmarco Jackson's performance was something that, like, really benefited the floor for this team, because I think, especially, you know, after Arturo Morris left, was dismissed from the team, the question was going to be, who's that second ball handler going to be? Who's going to be the guy that if Dwan Harris is having an off night, or if he gets into foul trouble or something happens, who can run the offense? I don't think anybody had stepped up, but seeing what Elmarco Jackson did and the amount of time that he spent actually running the offense in this game, I think gives you a lot of confidence that if he's called on to do it, he can do it. And oh, by the way, he can also do a whole bunch of other things, like we saw in the first game where he was much more of a scorer, as opposed to a facilitator, whereas this game he took on that facilitator role to kind of help pick up the slack where Dwan Harris was having a bit of an off night. But like you said, like Johnny Furphy, his performance is really good for the ceiling of this team, because you need to have a guy like that, especially when, you know, Nick Timberlake was having the trouble that he was having. You know, he went He went 1 of 4 from the field, making only his 2-point shot. He had 5 defensive rebounds, but he had 3 turnovers, 3 fouls. Like, he seemed off a little bit as well. But to have a guy like Johnny Furphy step up and to kind of be that three-point threat, high volume shooter that can still make a decent clip, I think is going to be super important. I will say though, I mean, I'm still super impressed with, Hunter Dickinson, 3-point sharpshooter. He is at 100% on the season so far. So, if he keeps this up, it's going to be some sort of record.
Well, yeah. And I think you look at the numbers he's putting up, and he's only played an average of 22 minutes in these first 2 games. So it's like, between him, if that's what we always talk about, like he can struggle or cannot look good, or he doesn't have to play much. And all of a sudden you look at the box score and it's like, oh wait, no, he's still got, I guess in this game, 21, 7, 5, and 2. Like that's, his passing again, the KJ and Dickinson's passing. Well, KJ is another guy we haven't talked about much, but he was the one setting the tone early with some big dunks. Just the passing overall. We talked about this. Oh wait, and sorry, I think I actually that was the NC Central game that I gave Hunter.
Yeah, I was gonna say Hunter was on 20 minutes. He was 18 points, 6 of 13 from two. He still had a great game.
Right, but you see on here like the. I think that's one of those things too, that just the passing overall we've seen, just Kansas is a very good passing team, and they make the reason the ball's going into the basket is, I don't think, less because of maybe luck or some fool's gold, but more that they are giving themselves open shots because of their spacing and their passing, which Amarco contributed to that as well. And then, yeah, Kevin McCullough, now you are seeing he's added this offensive element to an already very well-rounded game. His passing looks better as well. And he's someone who is going to put up a lot of big numbers, just not even with scoring, but if he can do 15, 7, and 4 a night and get a couple steals, he's looking at a first team All Big 12 nomination.
I mean, it's funny. We talked about how Jalen Wilson last year took the same jump that Ojai Agbaji did the year before him. I think Kevin McCullough, at least so far, seems to have taken the same sort of jump. Now, whether he can sustain it as long as they did is a huge question, especially when you have a guy like Hunter Dickinson who's going to eat up a lot of minutes and a lot of possessions. But I think he's taken that huge jump, at least early. He is clearly one of the leaders of the team. And, kind of to your point, talking a little bit about KJ Adams, though, Hunter Dickinson is going to be a high-volume shooter, and he is going to get a ton of points because of what he does and creates mismatches offensively. KJ Adams, though, I think is that high percentage shooter where if he's taking a shot, it's usually because he has a really good chance to make it. He was 7 of 8 in this game for 14 points. He doesn't take a lot of risky shots. A lot of his shots come off of great passes from other people. But KJ Adams is a guy who just has he comes off as a guy with a gigantic basketball IQ who is where he needs to be to take advantage of the opponent at the right time. Hopefully he keeps that up, but I think the most impressive thing is that there are just so many different styles of play from all these different players, and they mesh so well. I don't know that I've seen a team that meshes this well this early. Now, granted, the games down in Puerto Rico probably helped quite a bit, being able to play that game against Illinois, as an exhibition as opposed to a secret scrimmage, probably helped a little bit with that cohesion there, but that was the big question coming into the year, right? Was like, is the bench going to be deep enough? And I think with the 5 that you have starting, and then you add in, all of the guys on the bench, Johnny Furphy, Nick Timberlake, Parker Brown, and Jamari McDowell, like you add those 4 guys in and you have a really good 9 deep rotation that I think is going to serve you extremely well because of all the different things that they could potentially do.
Yeah. There were plenty of guys to come off the bench last year. It's just none of them were that reliable. Like I would much rather have 8 and you kind of have to roll the dice with injury luck and foul trouble and whatnot, but have 8 that are going to get you where you need to go 80% of the time versus having 10, but those last 3 or 4, it's like, man, it's any given night, who knows what the heck we're going to get. So I think it's one of those things where you need a little bit of luck on your side, but as long as everything goes well, I think you look up and down the roster of the scholarship players on there and you can feel pretty reliable about most of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think in years past, the what we've been so hopeful about is that there's so many players that could go off that it was like, oh man, one of them is going to go off, you know, and on any particular night, which didn't always happen, but usually happened. But I think this year it's different in that you don't necessarily have so many guys that can all do the same thing, but they have, like, here it's not who's going to go off, it's which pieces are you going to bring together that's going to work spectacularly tonight. You don't have to wonder what you're getting from guys. You know what you're going to get from guys. It's just a matter of how do you put that puzzle together. Whereas, you know, with other teams, it was so much of a, this is what we want to do. Who's going to be the person that actually steps up and does it, which is much less of a great thing to, you know, or I should say it's much more assuring to know what people are going to be able to do and just have to figure out how to make it effective against your opponent. So. All right, anything else about this game, or do we want to start looking ahead to the week that is?
Yeah, I think the week ahead is going to be an interesting one, so let's do that.
Yeah, so it's going to start with Penn State. We kind of talked about that. I think that's going to be a decent barometer, but Penn State against the Kansas women, I don't know that there's too much to talk about there because I honestly don't know that much about Penn State. But jumping ahead to Tuesday when Kansas takes on Kentucky in the Champions Classic, you know, I am actually glad that they don't make this the opening game of the season because it gives you a chance to actually see what your team can do and actually gives us, I think, it's going to be a whole lot nicer for us to actually be able to pull something from this instead of just being the first tune-up.
Yeah, agreed. I know now there's, you know, as a college basketball fan, I wish that maybe they didn't started on a Monday opposite Monday Night Football and there were at least a couple of marquee games in there or something to entice you a bit. But yes, I think this is one where it'll be interesting to see because you have this team gelling a little bit. You have an opponent who's not at full strength. They've also there's some good things to like about this Kentucky team so far, but also they're, you know, you hope that you're catching them at a good time early in the year. But yeah, it's one of those things where as a fan overall, I would love for the opening night of the season to be more of a celebration and a buzzworthy thing where you've got, you know, some great teams in prime time. And maybe not Kansas so that you're right. You have those break-ins, but yes, it is nice to get some, you know, Kansas should be pretty rested. They didn't play their starters that much last two games. Like this is now kind of the season kind of starts on Tuesday night and you see what you really have. Now that you've got the barometer to at least let guys kind of get their feet wet, and now's the first real test, and you see what you have here.
Yeah, and let's be honest, like Kansas is not the schedule that they have is not going to be extremely forgiving. You know, they have this game, and then obviously the next week they start off the Maui Invitational against Chaminade, which they always get to play Chaminade. Lucky them. I understand why the people that put that tournament together want Chaminade to play, you know, the marquee team in their first game because obviously that's like the best chance they're going to have actually be able to play a game like that. But you know, we'll find out who the other two opponents are next week, but then they, you know, have, you know, after that they have some pretty big games coming up. December 1st, they'll have Connecticut come in. You know, you have the game against Missouri at home. You have the game on the road against Indiana. Like, this is a fairly big non-conference schedule. I made a comment in the, in the post-game stuff about how it's not, or maybe it was in the predictions, but it's not very often that you see Kansas play three teams that are ranked 300 or higher in KenPom. Like, normally, yeah. Kansas is playing, you know, teams in the low 200s, you know, the high 100s as their quote-unquote cupcake games. And they have a really, really good strength of schedule at the end of the year. I do think that part of this is intentional, and I think also part of it is just that maybe some of these teams that you thought were going to be good, you know, maybe aren't going to be quite as good. Or I think it's also, though, like the whole RPI and the net ranking, like it's a lot harder to game the system now, apparently, which is what Kansas used to do, was identify a lot of people that would be really good for them in those. But regardless, like, this is a game up in Chicago, you know, Tuesday night, ESPN. We're, of course, the late game again, so at 8:30 is when it kicks off, or when it tips off, and we'll see, I'm sorry, half an hour after the first game, so probably more like 9 o'clock, knowing probably the way not. That these games yeah. go. So it'll be another late night. It'll be so much fun, but I am looking forward to this game. Is there anything about Kentucky that scares you, or anything that you think that fans should be prepared for with this Kentucky team? Or have you not had a chance to really look at them yet?
No, I was diving into them actually today a little bit too. It's interesting because they have not started out well, and then they kind of put the gats on. But their first two games have been the opposite of Kansas. So they only played, outside of the final minute of the game in game one, they only played eight players, and all their starters averaged, 35 minutes basically. And then even in this game where they kind of struggled a little bit against Texas A&M Commerce, they only played seven. Now, part of that is because their two big men are still hurt. And Aaron Bradshaw is a 7'1 freshman who is very highly talented. He's out with a foot injury. There's also another injury to another 7'1 player, a sophomore. And I'm going to butcher his name. I'm sorry, but...
Are you really sorry, though?
Ugana Onyenzo. Actually, I think I nailed it. Ugana Onyenzo. is also in there. So when you look at Kentucky, the first thing you notice, one, they're not very deep right now because they're missing a couple pieces. And two, they're not very big right now. And the team that was the number one team in offensive rebounding percentage a year ago is 208th through two games. And a lot of that is because they don't have their big man in the center. And when you look at their players, Justin Edwards is 6'8", Trey Mitchell is 6'9", Jordan Burks has played about 15 minutes a game, he's 6'8", and that's it. So there is very much a height disparity and a presence down low for Hunter Dickinson against Kentucky because Aaron Bradshaw is not there. The thing, though, that Kentucky has done well so far is they don't turn the ball over. Now, again, two worst teams, but they have the number one steal percentage in terms of not giving up steals, allowing steals, and also the number two turnover percentage in the country. So that's the thing that I think from a Kansas perspective through two games, you would like to clean up. Now, Kansas is just going to have more turnovers because Kentucky plays slow. Kansas plays fast. They want to get out and run. They pass the ball a lot. You're going to see a little more errant passes and just things happen in that regard, because that's the other thing, is that Kentucky so far this year has not been a great passing team in terms of assists. It's been, I think, a lot of kind of like me against you, whether it's okay, this time it's Justin Edwards, this time it's DJ Wagner, whoever it may be. There's obviously a lot of talent, but I think not having Aaron Bradshaw is going to be a big boost for Kansas. And then Kentucky is not deep right now either. So this is going to be one of those things where someone in early foul trouble could really make a statement here. DJ Wagner does look good. He hasn't been necessarily effective yet. Kentucky, the one thing you, I guess, also notice is that I think especially behind Antonio Reeves, is they're a little bit better three-point shooting team this year than they are last year, or at least they're hovering around they're north of 30%, but they're taking more threes. So I think, again, because they don't have that inside presence, they're now forced to kind of play on the perimeter a little bit more, which also means they are not getting to the free throw line very well. So I think this is an interesting matchup for Kansas in a lot of ways, because in the past, it's always been, okay, Kentucky's got the giants down low and they're all long and they're all 6'11 with freakish athleticism. That's not the case. Actually, now Kansas is kind of the taller, lengthier team. Even when
they're the gold standard for that this year. It's ridiculous.
Right. Like even, like Rob Dillingham is very good, but he's 6'3", Reed Shepard 6'3", DJ Wagner 6'4". Even, now Antonio Reeves is 6'6", but okay, Kevin McCullough matches up on him. You look at kind of just the size overall, and it's much more evenly matched than it has been in the past. And so, yeah, that's something to look at. And Kentucky, I'm curious. They've just not started games well against bad competition, and then they kind of put their foot down. But it's also just interesting to me that John Calipari, even in that 40-point win, because again, it was ugly at the start, he only played eight guys outside of getting his walk-ons on for the last minute, even when you're up by 40. So he clearly thinks they need to work on some stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, this is a team that, to your point, they don't get a lot of assists. They're ranked 225th in assist percentage. And then they give up a lot of assists. So, teams that pass the ball really well are making it, are actually be able to be fairly effective. That's how a lot of teams are able to get some good shots. So I'll be interested to see how much Kansas takes advantage of that. But yeah, I guess we're going to go ahead and find that out. We will. I'm not going to go ahead and do any kind of a Kansas State preview, just because we will be doing a a full preview, and my dog is getting a little upset with how long this podcast is going. So we're going to go ahead and cut it off here. But so that is going to do it for us today. Kyle, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you have not already, please do go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any of the million apps that are out there. Just search for Rock Chalk Podcast and subscribe. Get every episode as soon as it comes out. If you give us a rating and a review, 5 stars, nice comments would be absolutely fantastic. But if for whatever reason you can't do that, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring the podcast to you guys, get you all the information you need in as entertaining a way as possible. So if you ever have any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, contact me by email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. We are, of course, part of the 10-12 Podcast Network, covering all the teams in the Big 12 Conference, including the new ones coming in. Go to 1012network.com to get links to all the great shows we have. And, of course, support us over on our Patreon at patreon.com/1012network. I had a basketball article that went up last week that is absolutely fantastic. I highly recommend that you take a look at that based off of what Kelvin Sampson said in Big 12 Media Days. But that is going to do it for us today. Make sure you guys visit our sponsors, Prize Picks and Charlie Hustle. Great deals there with them. But thank you guys so much for listening. We will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.